Yep, I'm, it's going.
Oh, it's going.
Yep, whenever you're ready.
Hello, it is almost 5 o'clock. So we're going to call the meeting to order. I would like to call an order March 9th, 2023 meeting of the Parks and Recreation Open Space Advisory Board. And I confirm that there is a quorum present. The regular members that are present are Bruce Meade, well, besides myself, Bruce Meade, Kelvin Thomas, and Wendy Gallagher. And the absent regular members are Boyd Pelly, Sam Franklin, and Leslie Warren. The alternate members present are Rick Anderson, and the absent alternate is Monica Escamilla. That means that Rick is voting. Okay, so Rick, you will be voting tonight. And there's no other alternates to speak to, so we're good. Okay. Public comments. We have no requests for the request to speak. So we're going to move on to our first order of business, item 23-0060, minutes of the Parks, Recreation, and Open Space Advisory Board. The meeting of,
February 9th, yes.
Sorry, February 9th, it was February 9th, it was, wow. Okay, February 9th, 2023. Do we have a motion to approve this item?
Motion to approve.
The motion is made by Rick. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Kelvin has seconded the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion passes. We will now move on to our report. Item number 230282, the director's report. I will ask Assistant Director Ryan Mullins to discuss this item.
Madam Chair, thank you very much. So, unfortunately, our director is a little under the weather, couldn't be here today. So, at about 4 o'clock, I found out I was filling in. So, we're going to make it through this. It'll be short and sweet. Director's report, a couple of things we can go over, and I can speak to those. So, he's going to go over the fact that last week at the TRAPS conference, the TRAPS being the Texas Recreation and Parks Society conference, it's usually in beautiful destinations like Waco, Texas. It's been in Galveston, it's been in South Padre, but this year it was in Frisco, so it was right next door. So we went over there. It's our state conference. People were there. But our own director and Marty Silito spoke at the conference, and let Marty actually give you a little recap on that.
I do have a picture.
Yeah.
Well, everybody speak to that now.
Oh, you can speak to the picture if you want.
So we talked about our relationships with the Dorber groups, with the McKinney Parks Foundation, even as much as the Eagle Scout projects, some of the other groups we work with the Texas Tree Foundations, and these, you name it, we tried to tie all these together, and we were able to show them all the cool things that we can achieve when we allow the volunteers to do that. In addition, one of the slides we had, we were able to say, look, we saved over $210,000 in volunteer hours in the last 4 years. That's money, that's savings to us. So it was really neat once we had that, view that presentation, we've got people already contact us, say, hey, how can we do this? Where do we get started? So really great energy. We're definitely, I wish the conference was a little bit more exciting in some cases. Some of the presentations were pretty bland, but ours was pretty good. We showed overview slides of the video clips of the skills course at Irwin Park. We showed them the tree planting we did. Then we had a flyover of the McKinney Green 1600 trees that we planted that time. And it just went off really well. Mike and I have a lot of good energy back and forth, and so I had a lot of fun doing it.
It's a great session. was able to attend. I will say the room was only a third full, but it also sat like 180 people. So it was a good attendance for that session. That was a massive room. It was really long. There were a lot of people coming up asking questions afterwards. I do. A lot of people were engaged with it because of the great presentation they had and the slides they showed. And the big feature on it was kind of the DORBA skills course. So a lot of people were amazed at that. It was all done by volunteers. So a lot of people were reaching out, as Marty said, they continued to reach out. I believe we had you, Kowski, Will Doss, and Erica Light present at the conference. So we were well represented at the conference. There was a dozen or so staff. It's a little easier when it's next door.
Excellent. Wow.
Next thing I have for you is on February 21st, Mr. Kowski and I gave a tour. Let me take a picture again. Here for new staff at the new staff to the city or new staff to our Parks and Recreation Department. Took them on a tour for all looking. I wasn't, I guess, the main person taking the picture at that time because no one was looking at me. But we gave the tour staff of all of our recreation facilities. Here you had a mixture of parks maintenance staff, APEC staff. I think there was some from the Senior Recreation Center. So these are all people that are new to our department. We'd like to give them a tour around, introduce them to some of the folks because you work in Parks Maintenance. How are you going to meet the person at the Senior Recreation Center? Put them on a tour together. They instantly kind of bond there. Tour them all around the city, give them some history, some facts of some of our locations, what we're going to be doing. Took them out to Irwin Park. We got out and walked around a little bit there. Went to each one of the recreation centers. Apex, Old Settlers, met at the Senior Recreation Center, went to Recreation Center, Town Lake, went by some of the pools, showed them some of the parks. It was a great opportunity for us. About a three-hour tour that it didn't last as long as the other three-hour tour. That's the only time I've ever uttered that phrase before. But it was great, and we get great feedback from it. So we do these about once every other month or so. So some of the staff have been on with us for a little bit, and then the first opportunity to go on. Sort of our onboarding for new staff. It was a great atmosphere. So get our new tour bus out, so it's always fun there. Any questions on that? Good. Okay, last but not least, I want to have Joe Young with our Parks Development introduce a new employee with us who wasn't here for the tour, but he'll get his opportunity.
All right, we have Dakota Cryer over here. He's our new parks planner, too.
Hello, Dakota.
Hey, welcome.
I started on last Monday, so he's been here a little over a week. He comes from building inspections. We were lucky enough to steal him from building inspections. He used to be plans examining there. So he's got, experience looking at plans. He's got experience in background in construction. His parents run a construction company, so he's familiar with that. So we're very excited to have him on our team. I think he's well-rounded for makes our team a little well-rounded.
We're excited to see our Parks Development Department or Division grow because they have a lot of work to do, and there's five of them now. So that's a lot of projects coming up, and we're always happy to steal staff from other departments. So over the years I've been here, they stole a lot from us, so the best we can. So that concludes the report.
Thank you very much. Okay, we will now move on to our regular agenda items. Item number 23-0283. Consider and discuss various park naming opportunities. Assistant Director Mullins.
I'll give you a very brief history on some of the naming of parks. So back in 2014, our director, Lemuel Randolph, one of the last things he did before he left to go to the city of Arlington was he went before council and changed the ordinance to allow us to name parks after people that were still living, because at that time we could not. I don't know when that went into effect because we named Juanita Maxfield after it and she was there. So we did it one time. But for a long time, we did not name a park after someone until they had passed on. The reason for that change in the way was because the council wanted to name something after Dr. Matt Keel and George Webber, two names that were prominent at that time. Since then, we have named those parks after those men. They were there at the ceremony, and it was a great time. They have both passed on since then, so timing was of the essence at that time. For this item here, going forward, we've had a list that's been sort of a collection of names over the years of people who have done great things at McKinney. We've kind of gone through a lot of those names that really bubbled up to the top. So we're looking at now maybe some direction. We have two parks coming up. We have the Robinson Bridge Track Park coming up, and we have the Greens of McKinney coming up that we need to get names on. Robinson agreement is a little more time sensitive, as the contractor out there is itching to start ordering some of the signage for the park, although they're not going to be completed for a while, but this is how things go. So this is not an action item, but what Mike wanted to do is discuss the idea of names after people or names after geographical locations. We have Presley Park that we recently named. We have had a mix of it over the years. It's predominantly heavy on parks named after people, but we also have Inspiration Park, we have Serenity Park, we have Valley Creek Park. So we have a lot of them that are not. So I wanted to kind of get your ideas and direction on the future naming of these two parks.
What is Robinson Ridge? Where is that?
It's in Robinson Ridge. So it's going to be north of Wellmouth, west of Lake Forest.
Mm-hmm.
So Robinson Ridge, the entrance to it is off Wellmouth Road, just west of Lake Forest. It's kind of the northern end of the property, if you're familiar with that
near
area.
Hospital.
What?
Near the hospital.
North of it, of course, yes. So I live in the neighborhood next to it, which is Heatherwood. So we have Baker Elementary. It's Prosper ISD school, because that's Prosper ISD there. And we have Ledbetter Park, which is next to it. Due west of it will be the Robinson Ridge Track.
How big is it and what's on it?
April can explain on that park.
I'm kind of drawing a blank on that. Is it 15 acres?
About
15 acres. So we had a couple of challenges with that. We had a couple of easements. So we have a gas line easement and we also have a water line easement. So we did our best to accommodate that with the design. So it's basic neighborhood park as far as the amenities to a certain extent. Splash pad, parking lot, we're going to have a basketball court. We threw one single pickleball court there. It's just a neighborhood, so it's not a community park. So we don't want too much traffic there. But also a nice walking loop with fitness stations. But we wanted to take the opportunity because it is so near the elementary school that has a playground, as well it's almost adjacent to Ledbetter Park. Very, very near. With, I think it's just, a creek line that separates?
I think I measured it's about 800 feet.
Yeah. Which are both very traditional playgrounds. So with this one, we wanted to think out of the box a little bit. So it's going to have a really cool climbing wall. So a bouldering, there's a really large climbing boulder, and then some really neat rock walls that are going to actually be built on site where they spray it on the wall. So it's going to be unique textures and a feel. So there's an opportunity there if we wanted to go in that direction of kind of, bringing to attention the amenity there. But in recent history, we also named Prestwick Park just after the subdivision that it's in as well. So
Ryan, as I understand it, we're just kind of right now tossing out our general thoughts about if names should be geographic, not these two specific parks, but names should be geographic or about people or even just descriptive things, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Way, we're kind of finding some direction there. I think what Mike's direction will be is maybe to bring some names back for the next meeting for us to actually make a formal. So this board's one of their missions are to recommend names to the city council. City council could take it and name it whatever they want, but typically they'll follow the recommendation.
Okay.
Madam Chairman, interrupt for just a moment.
Yes.
I'm so sorry about this, but Monica's here, and I think she has the ability to vote based on number of S and...
one pickleball court and then a climbing rock wall.
Yes, ma'am. There's also a basketball court.
Okay.
And a splash pad.
Okay.
I will preface that a little bit. Unique to our other parks will probably be the pickleball and the rock wall.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot of our parks, Ledbetter Park has a basketball court in it.
And the splash
pad. We have 9 parks with the splash pads in it. So those aren't as unique, but the rock climbing wall will be a little unique to that.
Okay. So I was going to throw out.
Is that the only park that
has? I'm sorry.
Is that the only park that has a rock climbing wall?
A wall of this nature, if you look out here, actually you can see we have some boulders out there. Ledbetter has some boulders that are climbing boulders, like that's the technical term for that. But this will actually be a wall, and I forget the amount of it if you have.
I forget right offhand. Around 15, I think it's 15 feet,
18
feet.
This is the one. I remember. Thank you for showing me the picture. Got it.
Very unique.
Yes.
Park where it's. Because of the grade change in the park, we were able to, because it actually
slips
down.
I totally remember
it
now. Okay.
Okay, I'm sorry. So I was going to point out, when we name a park geographically, it's easy for people to find, they know where it is. When you name it after a person, of course, you make that family and friends feel wonderful. And descriptive things, when you name it descriptively, like you said, Serenity, people have no idea where it is unless they've been there. So it's almost like, at least as I feel, geographical is really good because then people know where it is. And if you do names of people, that's really good because it makes people happy and feel proud. So that's my thoughts.
I'm not so sure how Inspiration Park is.
Right.
But it's at Columbus. And I did ask my staff if we were tossing back and forth. Prestwood Park in the Prestwood subdivision.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So Valley Creek was right. Valley Creek Elementary and Valley Creek Roadway. Robinson Bridge was a possible name for this. Subdivisions that I know of, I haven't really changed names
yet
at times. We have had a street change, and I was kind of pointing that out, that they split Charles McKissick Park on La Cima, not La Cima, on Old Salina Road, and actually says that there, and the road was changed to Hitterberg. So that has happened, but we haven't had a subdivision change names.
Rick?
Well, I think your points were accurate. And like when you're in a school like Valley Creek, it's not going to make much difference. The one thing I think you could add to being someone's name is that not only does it help the family, but inspires other people throughout the entire Metroplex to be willing to do something like that. I'll give you an example that has not been, is that Town Lake. Bob Roeder donated all of that land 40 years ago, and he's not a word has ever been said about him. But I would lean just a little bit more towards naming it after someone so that it influences the rest of the community.
That's a good point.
I like that idea especially for smaller parks that are, not a big 200-acre company. We have 7 parks over 200 acres in McKinney. It seems like those should probably be named after the geography of the area, some unique aspect of it. But a smaller park with playground amenities, rock wall amenities, neighborhood park or named after a person is great. The swimming facility that we recently renamed within the last year, that's a great example of where I think name makes sense.
I agree with everyone. I mean, there's a lot of good thoughts and suggestions. I'll ask. I really don't have a preference over geography or adjective or a person. I think if it is geography, I mean, I like that. I mean, it should definitely draw people to the neighborhood. If it's inspirational or like Serenity Inspirational or something like that, I'd like to be a common theme across a lot of different parks. The only question or concern I have about parks being named after people is that the people who use the park, the people who live around that park, whoever it's named after should either have had some impact on that direct community. Those people should know who that person is. I mean, and then there should also be some kind of diversity, equity, inclusion impact involved. I mean, can't have all of them named after. You gotta have some of that factored into it. So I'll be okay with whatever you guys suggest.
As a 48-year resident of McKinney, and it's not a pushback on that, the one thing that said will present a challenge to us at times is a lot of times the names that we're going after, the name that we have on our list, are from an older generation of McKinney, which is fine, but McKinney wasn't as big as it is then. So when we talk about the neighborhoods and we have these names, those neighborhoods didn't exist. They weren't even part of McKinney at the time. We had some people that wanted us to name what eventually became Dr. Maxwell Park after Grady Littlejohn. Grady Littlejohn's contributions to the city of McKinney were through girls' softball, starting to get baseball, running concessions. That park had none of that, and it was in so far west of McKinney that it was almost in Frisco, and that didn't even exist in McKinney, I believe, maybe while he was still alive. So not during his time. So finding exactly what you meant, I think has great merit, naming after something that means to the neighborhood or something there. Mm-hmm. May not occur when we're getting into newer neighborhoods. It's just a little more difficult, challenging to do that. So Dr. McHill, named after Parkway in West McKinney, my ideas with George Webb and his history, we almost wanted a bigger park after him because he had such great history with Parks and Recreation specific. But we had a neighborhood park coming up all the time, but again, it's in far west McKinney. So we don't always have that synergy happening at that moment, but I do agree with your thoughts on that.
Do we have a list of like people that we are considering naming it after? Like, is there?
We've had lists over time, and a lot of them. So our lists sometimes get. We have other departments ask at the time because like, hey, we're looking for name of road, and so maybe one of the names we have on the list is drawn off and a road's named after them. So we've had a list over time, and it really hasn't been added to in a while, and it could be. I think it hasn't been much thought gone into it for maybe the last few years, but there is a list that we had of a collection of names. Being here for a long time, I recognize some of the names and some of the names I do not.
Who makes the final decision?
City Council. So what this board does is this board recommends a name to the City Council, and the City Council either says yay, nay. They said before, go back to the drawing board, and we've done that before, and come up with a name, and they typically approve a name that we recommend. At that one time, they didn't like the name we recommended, just asked us to come back. They didn't necessarily say what they wanted it to be, so we came back to them. But legally, the City Council could name it A if you came up there with B, and so they could do what they would like.
So that's going to be April. Mike's going to bring names to us.
We can do that, yes.
Okay.
Yes. And,
right.
And if the board is okay with it, we'd like to probably do is bring out some geographical and maybe make some names in it as well.
Cool.
Just kind of give you an idea of what is possible.
Yeah, if you guys can do that, I'd appreciate it. Like, give me a list of, you know, a short list of maybe five names, a short list of maybe five inspirations for me, and maybe a short list of geographical names. And that would make it a lot easier for us to talk about it, weigh the merits of all of those.
Yeah, just to speak a little bit on the names too. I mean, I don't see why you couldn't marry the names with the geological location, like Joe whatever at Robinson Ridge or something like that, where you get the geographic. But I love the idea of having a name attached to it just because it brings history to the community. I don't care who it is. It's just, hey, this person did this X in the community. They were very passionate about it. You get their history. And then I do also love the idea of having a geographical location where you can easily find it.
We've over time tried to go back and tell a story of some of the names of the parks. And we have
like George Webb.
Doing some of those. That was our first one to really get it. Actually, I think I'll take it back. Dr. McHale was the first one we really got into.
Yeah.
We had the video, but we do have a board out there that has pictures of him and tells a little bit of his history. We're trying to get into that a little bit more. Also, by going back and trying to do that history on some of those names of those parks that have been for years and trying to figure those out. And some of them, like Wally Park, you know, some people thought it was after former Mayor Pro Tem Willie Watley, but it's after Wilmarine Watley. The park was named Watley Park. It didn't have Wilmarine in it. So, you know, to try to get that and try the history and make sure that the person is recognized, not just, you know, with the last names.
Yeah.
Any other comments? So are you also looking for,
go ahead.
Looking for suggestions too for names from us if we have any to email later or
absolutely
not?
Yeah, I think it's always warranted,
okay.
Especially with the board that makes a recommendation, so anything that's generated from the board certainly helps.
And then from that, you're planning to present next month a list.
We can,
in
yes.
April. And, I have one other question. Are there plaques or anything up at the other parks that say something about the parks that are named after?
There's a plaque in each park, and that plaque typically has the name of the person on there.
But no
history. It gives a list of the City Council at the time, park board at the time,
okay.
And construction company, and park director.
But no history about the person.
There hasn't been. That's what we're trying to go back into.
Okay.
Okay. We've done that on the parks that we've created recently.
Mm-hmm.
So we did that with George Webb. We did that with Mac Hill. And we're looking at doing that with Tinker Taylor. I believe we're working on that one. So that's a park that we had in our inventory that we're going back and doing something with. And we're going to try to do the same thing with multiple parks.
So it'll be nice to just start that process when the parks are named.
Yeah, so
okay.
we'll try to do that every time we name a new park, of course, if it's named after someone that we can tell a history on. And it's been relevant because some of these we can still interview people who knew them or what. And some of them we go back a little further, we may have a little more trouble doing that.
Okay, all right, thank you.
I would say that if we're going to name it after people, we need to start getting suggestions and adding to that list because that list is very limited.
Patrick Cloutier.
And history. So if y'all know of names and want to submit those, please do.
Before the next week, well, Sam, I like your idea too about integrating the two.
Yeah,
I really do.
Today, I think the parks that we have named that have that in it have been a great range.
Superintendent, we've
had
his name.
So. Tim White Park. Add that to the list. Tim White Park, please.
For the park, is there any space dedicated to native plants or any type of, you know, like areas that is just natural and more like undisturbed?
Well, with this current park site, take Robinson Ridge for example, it's kind of a vacant flat lot. I mean, there is some topography to it, but we will be putting in some landscaping. I'll let them actually speak to what those are. But it didn't have anything naturally on there because it was in the middle of the subdivision and kind of cleared for the subdivision to begin with. So what may have been there at the time, if we go back with anything like that, we're taking what the area had and putting in there. It wasn't there when we started construction of the park.
Currently in this design, we try to keep it as low maintenance as possible. So it's just low maintenance shrubs and grasses. So we don't have there's not a lot of perennials or wildflowers or anything like this.
What we found over time was in developing some of these parks that they had an elaborate landscape designed into it. It was a big burden on our parks maintenance to try to maintain it exactly how it needed to be from when it was designed and put in. So we've tried to tone that down a little bit to make the maintenance a lot easier so we can spread our staff out to the more parks.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Excellent
discussion. I love the ideas they all came up with. Okay, so we're going to move on to citizen comments, and I don't see any. So we'll move on to comments from board members.
Just one. So McKinney Park Foundation, the next work day is March 25th. Still need to see some board members out there. It starts at 8 o'clock and goes until 11 o'clock, and that one will be at Town Lake. So cleaning up the trails and just getting that back to the way it should be.
Anybody volunteer for that?
Mm-hmm.
I have a teenager who needs a lot of volunteer hours, and I love the fact that she could have to do some really hard work.
you guys volunteer hours for court, right?
Sure. Yeah, we had last year we had almost 2,000 volunteer hours just within MKF. I think we've had 4,000 inception to date over the last 4 years. But the number of volunteers that we're getting out on any given event, I mean, we're getting 60 without even trying on a cold, nasty morning. You know, we've had corporations that have shown up, and we've got 150 people planting 80 trees sometimes. So it's we need to plan it, and we need to kind of know who's coming. So people register, and we usually expect 2 to 3 times that many that actually show up to the event. So YMSL is a big, they get a lot of service hours there. A lot of high schools have service hours. Boy Scouts show up in droves, and just general run-of-the-mill public.
I think she's referring to mandatory voluntary workout from her child.
Yes.
You told me what needs to happen.
Somewhere for like 8 straight hours. Just make it really hard.
Give me one year old to change.
Just make her do things she
needs to do. Yeah, that's great.
Well, I'm going to be lifted.
We're saying
eight to nine. I just want to comment on maintenance after that big windstorm last week, because I walk around Town Lake or the nature walk every single day, and they were cleaning up within hours after it, and it looked great. I just want to comment how well and how maintained it is, considering, you know, how much difficulty there was in that. You just said Town Lake, is that going to be the nature walk?
Nature trails is typically what MPF works on.
This is a personal thing, is that they're already 20 feet wide, and I just took a picture. There's the trail is nothing but a creek 50 yards long. They don't need the foundation in there at all in the nature walk.
Oh, really?
But in the 4 years that they've started doing that, there is no nature left at all. There's not a squirrel. There's not a... I used to see foxes, skunks, armadillos. I see nothing now. And like I say, I go through there almost every day. And they've added 2 more paths that don't need to be there. I think that needs to be left alone.
Let's
personal
connect offline. And we do board meetings every Thursday before events happen. And the public's welcome to attend. So let's connect offline. And I'll get you started.
I just wanted to say also that one of the things I pledged that I was going to go to every park, and I've gone to like 18 or so far, and I'm just in amazement of how nice and how well they're done. I don't know, I'm not an expert to know what makes a great park or doesn't make a great park. Just in some of them, I can tell you that they look like they might could use a few more amenities rather than just a few slides, and you know, more swings or something, more things like our Bonnie Wings, you know, things that are extra things to do. And then I know that I realize the maintenance is an issue, but there's no bushes, there's no flowers, there's no thing, it's just green grass and trees. So if that, you know, I know some of the Dallas parks have, you know, rose gardens and things like that. I didn't know if that was ever a consideration. So.
I would say the park development over time has changed. And you say you're not sure what makes a park a great park. We're not really sure either. And I say that because I know that division, they kind of reinvent themselves. Things come up new. If you look at the parks and how they've progressed over the years, the amenities change, and so the design of the ideas of them kind of change and flow. And we've come a long way from some of the other parks that we've put in, like Murphy Park right now. When I was a kid, we went to Murphy Park. It wasn't necessarily the equipment we played on. There was a concrete storage tank in the back that had a dilapidated fence around it that we played on. That was great. But they're redoing Murphy Park. And so we're going back to some of these smart parks, the small park, and then putting new amenities. So there is ideas that are constantly flowing, and you know, we're always taking suggestions, and we want to make sure that we get what the neighborhood wants. That's why the public input meetings, but also what people in the city would like to see.
Murphy Park was one of the ones that I went to, and it still got the fence around, but it looked like it's going to be a fantastic event and adventure.
A lot of folks use a lot of like Texas drought tolerant. There are like knockout roses that are low maintenance. There's crepe myrtles are low maintenance relatively if you keep them trimmed up at the bottom because you don't want to crepe murder them. But served on that board for 6 years. But there are a lot of color planting that we can do. But I think using less and drought tolerant is good with our maintenance crew too, just to keep it looking nice and neat.
It's a mixture. I had a discussion with a gentleman one time many years ago who was upset with the condition of the grass at I think it's Hilltop Park, and he said that you know the only thing grass needs is to be watered, fertilized, and aerated every once in a while. His lawn is fine because he didn't have any problems with limestone shelf that we were having problems with. And you know, in my head, my retort was, well, let me get 300 school kids trampling on your lawn and see how well your lawn looks. But that's also one of the things that our staff has to deal with. If you want to put something nice in there and people want to take the path of least resistance, which is through that flower bed, mm-hmm. it's where they want to go. And so I know that over time, that's one thing that's also changed is, okay, what are the patterns of people are going to come into the park mm-hmm. and they're going to go this way, not that way, and they're going to trample this. And so we kind of have to be easy to maintain, but also. It's also, you know, kind of a destructive proof from people, so we're balancing that.
Mm-hmm. I'd also like to add that we're kind of branching out in some of our facilities. So you think of the Old Settlers, they've got that butterfly garden stuff that we're using. Downtown at the Impact, we've also started putting in pollinator plants and stuff like that. So I think we're dabbling a little bit more here and there, trying to expand it a little bit more. But yeah, some of these bigger places, sometimes you have to have a swath of something simple. Maintenance, but once you get up higher maintenance, higher plants, more people have got to get that back up too. The other thing we're competing with is the new parks that are coming on, right? Mm-hmm. So the old parks still have to be maintained, and as the new parks come on, more amenities, we got to make sure we have the staff to support that. So, and the roses, I know maybe you've heard about the rose fungus that's been going around.
I have it.
Yeah.
So
it's tough. I'm a fan of roses. I used to take care of roses all the time. So we try to find alternatives, right? Definitely trying to stick on the drought tolerant, the native plants the best we can. Some would argue that even drought tolerant plants aren't the same thing. There's some native plants that are also water lovers. So you gotta be careful how you use that in context as well.
You also have your wildflowers.
And your wildflowers, yeah. Which we've been doing a lot of wildflowers. Yeah, Great Ranch,
awesome.
We're putting a bunch up on Irwin Park. We've got some blue bonnets we've started putting out at Finch Park. So we're starting to dabble in a few other places here. So I think we'll see more of that, what you're looking at.
Good.
Yeah. Look for our blue bonnets.
It does say nature at the front of the park.
Yeah.
I did have another question. because I know several of the parks are attached to schools. And Burks Elementary, is that a park?
No.
Because it's all, there's a tennis court and everything there. I didn't know.
The tennis court belongs
to that's George Bush's.
That belongs to the ISD.
Does it belong to the ISD now? The land next to it does, but the tennis court is George Bush's.
They sold it to the ISD and they're going to expand and build a playground there, so that's ISD property.
A long time ago, McKinney had four elementary schools before they built Valley Creek being the fifth, so they had, Westport, but it was Burks, Rear, Webb, and Finch. All the property around those, Webb is a little different because across the street is Old Settlers Park, but all of them, their larger playground and area was all school district. Over time, when we started kind of a partnership with them of getting land next to the schools, building these parks similar to this one, which is next to Willamette Elementary, McKinney ISD School, I think the schools have actually kind of shrunk their design a little bit. So they do have some spots for the kids to play. There's a playground on the other side here, but I've seen that thing. That grass is very hard to stay. It is a mud pit at times.
My only point was that in visiting some of the different ones, parks, especially those that are attached to schools, I've gone at different hours just so I wasn't biased. But anytime after school, those parks that are attached to schools are packed. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it be Valley Creek or the Forgotten Park that's, I forget where. I'm not sure the exact street, but anyway, several of them that have been in Texas schools, I'm just amazed at how many, not only parents, but under six, they were there too.
We started that program, I believe Valley Creek was our first one. We named it Valley Creek Park, which is Valley Creek Elementary, and we have littered around, but we have those now with McKinney ISD, Prosper ISD, and Frisco ISD, three of the seven school districts that are in the city limits of McKinney. And it's a great amenity to have because those schools are generally centrally located in a neighborhood, and now our neighborhood park is centrally located in the neighborhood as well. We're able to share parking for some of those for people coming, but it's been a great program that we've had. And the school kids have the opportunity to go over there. They get called all the time in the spring about we're having our end of school function, can we go over to the park and do this? And we work with them and say yes.
Let's move on to our liaisons, Mary Barnes Tilly from NCDC.
Yes, thank you. Let's see, we're in the midst of giving away a lot of money, which is pretty much all we do, but we just finished our project grant cycle and voted on that. We are now in the retail development, so we just heard presentations at our meeting. We have five this time, which is really good. So we'll be taking that up at our next meeting. And we were also able to give away two Quality of Life Awards recently, Rob Temple and the CD Project Foundation from MCDC. So we're excited. So just sort of business as usual with MCDC. Some other things happening, but the stuff that's public is that. So. And watching Tufts. Hopefully.
Yes, of course.
Hopefully Tufts will, yeah. That's another thing we're constantly doing.
And I do not see Deidre Woodard from Visit McKinney, so we will move on to our city council liaison, Councilman Patrick Cloyer.
I'll talk about two things, talk about 380 and I'll talk about the airport. Let me talk about 380 first. We're in the final throes with TxDOT of getting a bypass on 380. The bypass will basically come from east of Airport Road. It'll start coming north. It'll go over Highway 5, it'll go over 75, basically parallel to Blue Mail. And then we'll cut south, just to the west of Ridge Road. And McKinney likes where it is on the east, council does. We don't like where it is on the west. We wanted it to go through, keep going through Prosper and cut over there on the other side of Custer to Coit, but that's not what TxDOT selected. Although that's not the it's not the best option for McKinney the way it is, and it hurts the people who live in Tucker Hill the most, and maybe La Cima. Three of those people who live in Tucker Hill are Sam's father, my oldest daughter, and our Congressman Keith Self. It's not the best for them, but it's better than no bypass at all. 380's a nightmare, and it needs to be done. So the city's still working with TxDOT on that. it's going to be a long project, years and years, but it's something that, it's a problem of a growing city. The other one is the airport, and as you probably know, there is a ballot initiative for the airport on the May 6th ballot. What that is to use general obligation bonds to finance a passenger terminal at the airport. There's three ways that the city can finance the commercial terminal. One of them is general obligation bonds. Now, I'd like to equate this to if you're going out to buy a house. If you're going out to buy a house and you have real good credit, you expect your interest rate to be low, right? That's what our general obligation bonds are, because McKinney's a AAA-rated city. So the interest rates will be low, which means that it's the path of least resistance to get profit from the taxpayer. If another option that we can do is something called revenue bonds. Now, revenue bonds are much more risky because they're not tied to the city of McKinney. They are tied simply to the revenue of the airport. That's going to be a higher interest rate on those, so it's harder for the taxpayer to realize a benefit from there. The taxpayer's not taking any risk. In fact, it's just on the city. The last one is what's called a P3, public-private partnership. An example of an airport doing that is New Haven, Connecticut. LaGuardia is doing that on a new terminal, partnered with Delta. New Haven's doing it with Goldman Sachs. That is, you get a private partner to come in and build it, they run it, they want their profit margin, right? Before the taxpayer gets anything. Those options are still on the table if we don't get the general obligation bonds. The McKinney taxpayer has been shouldering the burden of the airport since 1979. By far the most valuable asset in the airport, and the most expensive by far, is the runway. The McKinney taxpayers take the risk for that. So we think it's good policy to let the McKinney taxpayer vote on the bond. Now, some people are concerned about it, and I'll admit I'm a fan of this, and I'm going to vote yes personally as a citizen. The airport, the runway is a north-south runway. That means we will never see traffic in east or west McKinney because of this airport. It all comes from the north and south. To the north, the airport is floodplain. To the south, you've got Lake Lebon. You do have some citizens that are not thrilled in Fairview and Lucas, but that's okay. The other thing is traffic going in there. We'll have 4 days. It'll be about 1,500 implanements and consequently deplanements a day. So say there's 3,000 people traveling to and from. That's a lot of people. But you know what? At HEB, when we get that open, it's going to be 25,000 people a day on a Saturday. Driving an Eldorado and a Custer and everything there. Our roads can handle it. We will have new roads to handle it. In my estimation, I'm happy to talk to anybody offline, and I know people of goodwill can disagree. This is the best opportunity for McKinney for economic development that we've got, is commercial service at the airport. Commercial development, economic development, puts downward pressure on our homeowners' tax rates. And so I'm a big fan of that. But again, happy to talk to you offline. Again, people of goodwill can disagree. But the last thing on the airport, thank you, Madam Chair, for the time, is that the environmental impact studies, the initial part is coming out. I think it's going to be on March 23rd at Old Settlers. It's on the city website where you can go and look at it. And then later on at Cockrell Middle School, the videos will be posted online for people who don't want to make it. But if we're going to have this commercial terminal, we've got to successfully comply with environmental and noise impact, or we're not going to have it. Whether the voters vote the bonds or not, we're not going to have it. Chances are somewhere bordering on about 100% that we will comply, because there may be mitigation things we need to do, but we will do them to comply. And if you think about it, we've already got airplanes flying out of the airport, so what's really the difference, meaningful difference on environmental and noise with these big jets, especially since the big jets already land here because we are a reliever airport for DFW and Love, which means that if Love Field has a supercell on it and a 737 from Southwest can't land there, it can land at TKI in McKinney, and they do. So, anyway, those are two big things going on in the city. Happy to talk to anybody offline about it. Appreciate all y'all doing.
Just a quick question. How many planes would that per day would that add if we had?
The initial projection is we will have 4 gates in this terminal, and it will be about 12 flights a day. Now,
12 flights?
Initially.
Wow.
Initially. But we are, if we do this, we are in the business of building this thing up. Mm-hmm. Eventually, it could be Love Field. Love Field is 20 gates. And we could do that. If you want to stress test it, San Diego is a single runway airport, 41 gates. I don't think we'll ever be there, but initially, in the initial years, it'll be 4 gates, roughly 16 flights a day, 12 to 16.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay. Are there any staff comments?